the most important Soviet film that anyone who wants to know about Russian and Soviet culture needs to see. All Russians, they love Russia and they hate Russia at the same time. That's normal. And like this film is like, it's exactly what we love about our country. It's like the best we can imagine.
It's a classic Soviet movie. It's like Gone with the Wind or Some Like It Hot. It's a classic movie which everyone knows, which everyone loves. If we talk about genre, then this film is definitely an Eastern Western.
In the opening shots of White Son of the Desert, we see a peasant girl in a red headscarf carrying buckets across a lush green meadow. Then the Russian beauty lifts up her embroidered skirts and wades thigh-deep into a rippling stream. Cut to a man in a grubby white uniform traipsing across the desert. We understand he's composing a letter in his head to this woman, his beloved Katerina Matveyevna, and promises to return to her soon. But as the camera pulls out and we see nothing but sand dunes for miles around, the grass and the birch trees of home seem a distant mirage. For the next half hour, I'm going to be exploring what's become known as the Eastern Western, from the deserts of Central Asia to the badlands of Siberia. These are not the classic Soviet films such as Battleship Potemkin or Ivan the Terrible, usually shown in art house cinemas in the UK. These Russian cowboy movies are decidedly mainstream, and I'm focusing on the first, most popular one of all, White Son of the Desert. Moscow critic Sergei Polatovsky says the opening sequence sets up the clash of cultures at the core of the film.
There is this dichotomy of north and south, or east or west, where Russia is west and those sands are east, the Orient, something exotic and dangerous. And there's this idea, this white man's burden, right? A Russian soldier at the end of the Civil War, somewhere in the sands, and God knows what he's doing there.
The setting of the film is the eastern shore of the Caspian Sea, today's Turkmenistan, and the hero, Fyodor Sukhov, is a Red Army soldier who's been demobbed after fighting the civil war in Russian Central Asia. He's desperate to go home, but gets caught up in a showdown between a Bolshevik cavalry unit and some Basmachis. That's the name the Russians gave to armed counter-revolutionaries in the southernmost Soviet republics. These Islamic Turkic rebels are the equivalent of the Indians in the American Western, crafty, ruthless, and brave. American cowboy movies may have been synonymous with freedom and capitalism, but Soviet leaders couldn't resist them. Stalin was intrigued and infuriated by John Wayne. The American actor's anti-communism disturbed the Soviet leader so much that, according to Orson Welles, he once sent the KGB off to Hollywood to assassinate him. As for Leonid Brezhnev, he had a soft spot for a B-movie actor called Chuck Connors, who starred in a 1960s US TV series, The Rifleman. At a party in California hosted by Nixon, Connors presented a delighted Brezhnev with a pair of Colt 45 revolvers. The General Secretary returned the favour by allowing the Connors series to be shown on Soviet TV. But what Brezhnev and the rest of the Politburo really wanted was a homegrown product, a Red Western, according to Valentin Yezhov, one of the screenwriters of White Son of the Desert.
The Cinematography Committee had got a complaint from one of the big shots. Apparently somebody asked why we don't make Westerns like the Americans. We were told to produce a Western and to try and make it better than the American ones. That was a tall order. We'd never made any before, but we had to come up with something. Then I thought, what if our main character is a simple soldier in a faded army shirt? No Stetson, no blue jeans, a soldier from Russian folklore, a fairy tale kind of guy who can make soup out of an axe. And also, of course, a Superman who can fire his gun a split second faster than any Western hero.
White Sun in 1969 was the first of many such gunslinging action films, paving the way for a genre of national Easterns. In these movies, the Ural Mountains are the equivalent of Monument Valley, the Volga River replaces the Rio Grande, and the heroes sport Civil War-style Budionovkas or fur-lined shapkas instead of Stetsons. The author, James Meek, who used to be a foreign correspondent in Moscow, watched lots of Easterns on TV in hotel rooms across the former Soviet Union. He says his novel, The People's Act of Love, which begins with the arrival of an escaped prisoner in a small Siberian village, was partly inspired by these films.
You have tiny, isolated communities far from any sort of civilization, where any character who enters into this little community changes it completely. The whole idea of the stranger riding into town, it's very central to the Western, but it's also very central to this sort of Siberian world of scattered, remote communities.
In White Sun of the Desert, Central Asia rather than Siberia is the backdrop. It's not just the setting, but strange juxtapositions, which powerfully reinforce a sense of the alien. As the hero Sukhov trudges through the desert, he suddenly stumbles upon a head sticking out of the sand. It belongs to a victim of bandits, a man who's been tied up, buried up to his neck, and left to die in the noonday sun. With a sigh, Sukhov stops, tries to talk to the head, and then kneels down to pour water through the cracked lips.
2 часа. Давно обосновался?
It's clear in the first few minutes that White Sun is not a simple cowboy flick. It has some bizarre twists reminiscent of a famous Spanish filmmaker, says Sergei Polatovsky, the Moscow cinema critic.
I think this film is great because of its rather surrealist approach. The famous scene of a man talking to a head, it's like Luis Buñuel. The head is there, and it's perfectly normal. There's no dramatic score attached to it. It's like, oh, I saw a head in the sand. No, nothing like that. So there's a head in the sand, and you say, hello, so what's up, and a cup of tea? Oh, yeah, sure, a cup of tea. No milk, please. That's the point, and I think it's registered with Soviet people who were accustomed to this double mentality, that strange, bizarre things happen, but you act as if they're normal. Somehow reality was surreal, but you learn to act as if it was okay.
White Sun also stands out because of its unusual plot. Valentin Yezhov, one of the writers, knew a Red Army commander who had fought Basmachis in Central Asia. So Yezhov and his co-screenwriter used to ply the commander with vodka and ask him to describe his adventures. Most of the stories involve routing and surrounding enemies, typical soldiers' tales. But one day, in desperation, Yezhov asked him whether anything funny had ever happened in the desert.
And he said, oh yes, lots of strange things. Once, for example, we found an abandoned harem. These girls in yashmaks were sitting by a well. And of course we had to take them to the nearest town, feed them, etc. We couldn't just leave them on their own in the desert. And when I heard that, I almost yelled for joy, because that funny story gave birth to everything else.
And so instead of going home to his plump Russian wife, Comrade Sukhov ends up having to guard and protect the harem of the Basmachi guerrilla leader, Abdullah.
Zarina! Jamila! Yusel!
As Sukhov calls out the names of the 8 women Zarina. Like a weary schoolteacher, he realizes his task will be a tricky one.
Gulchatai! Gulchatai!
Gulchatai, the skittish youngest wife, fails to respond to the register. She's too busy playing with her pet tortoise. The women are horrified when Sukhov strolls into the courtyard and sees them without their veils.
Не бойтесь, это наш господин!
Gulchatai tells them not to worry. She believes the soldier is their new lord and master. So Sukhov feels it's time for a dose of Soviet-style enlightenment.
Товарищи женщины, революция освободила вас. Вас нет.
Comrade women, the revolution has liberated you. You have no master. Nobody owns you anymore. Just call me Comrade Sukhov and forget about your accursed past. You will be all free to work. And each of you will have her own husband. Any questions?
Вопросы есть?
Of course, the troublesome Gulchatai has lots of questions. She performs a seductive dance for Sukhov and is puzzled by his lack of interest. But I'm your wife now, she tells him.
Моя жена дома.
My wife is at home.
Разве ты не можешь сказать, что...
Can you just tell her that Gulchatai is your favorite wife now? She won't mind, will she?
Обидится.
Oh, yes, she will.
Сколько раз тебе объясню?
How many times do I have to tell you? We have only one wife. Just one. Understand?
Ладно, ладно, спокойной ночи.
Good night.
Завтра поговорим.
We'll talk some more in the morning.
As Sukhov nods off, he dreams of his own Russian harem. Katerina and a host of maidens in flowery headscarves snuggling up to him besides a teapot and a samovar. But despite the jokes, the film has its moments of pathos, even tragedy. Vitaly Yerenkov, a contemporary Russian film director, says one central theme, the gulf between Europe and Asia, today feels more relevant than ever.
He asks her to lift her veil because he really wants to see her face. He knows he's going to like her very much. So the girl lifts her veil and he sees the bearded face of the husband of the warlord who has already killed this youngest wife of his and is now out for revenge. He is dressed up in her clothes and instead of seeing a pretty face of an Eastern girl, the boy gets a knife in his belly and dies. It's just a fitting metaphor of the dangers that you encounter when you venture into the East.
And what about the most famous catchphrase of all in the film, Vostok delo tonkoe, you know, the East is a delicate matter?
Quite often when Russians discuss the issues of ethnic relationship within Russia, in the Caucasus, the war in Chechnya, the Soviet war in Afghanistan, or what's happening in Iraq now, quite often they will come up with this phrase, Vostok delo tonkoe, the East is a delicate matter.
Although it's often tongue-in-cheek, White Sun does portray the Soviet domination of the Turkic lands as a struggle of liberty, humanity and progress against the barbaric and the primitive. Hamid Ismailov, an Uzbek writer now based in London, accepts that there's little subtlety in the way Central Asians are depicted. But anyway, he says, that's not the main focus of the film.
You can say that Sukhov is patronizing, but at the same time, he is facing the dangers of this life. He is the stranger to that life, you know. But this film was particularly about Russians, about love to Russia. And the song in the film was about Russia. It was in the tradition of White Army songs. Longing for Russia is apparent in the Red Army heroes, Fyodor Sukhov. That's apparent in a custom officer who was left there from the Tsar's time, and it's apparent even in a keeper of the museum who hides there not the Central Asian artifacts but icons of Russia.
The hero's predicament, trapped in a foreign hostile environment, reflects the film director's own life. Vladimir Motil's father died in Stalin's camps, and he grew up in exile in the northern Urals. He understood the brutality of the Soviet regime and loathed playing the party game. Early on, he'd fallen into disfavor for making a romantic comedy set in 1944, which Soviet bureaucrats felt was a disrespectful treatment of the Great Patriotic War. Motil was practically forced to direct White Sun by the boss of a Leningrad film studio. He was told it was his last chance. But like many other directors who'd already turned the job down, he found the screenplay wooden and melodramatic. He agonized over the decision for days.
In the morning, after a sleepless night, I was dozing. And suddenly, I saw this Russian woman, the kind of village beauty I had seen countless times before. And I remembered characters from my childhood, when I was living in exile. Characters from the past, like these white guardsmen. And there were other remnants of the old Russia there, like an old customs officer who became the inspiration for Verishchagin. So then I thought, yes, I can do this. And I got to work.
Motil rewrote most of the screenplay, especially the dialogue for the anachronistic Verishchagin. He's the drunken former Imperial Russian customs official, still in charge of the trading outpost and museum, where Sukhov and the harem take shelter. Motil shot the movie on a frantically tight schedule, but it was banned straight after completion. Censors felt it was historically suspect and that the role of the Communist Party wasn't nearly clear enough. Above all, they objected to the reluctant hero, who's more interested in getting home to his wife than in Soviet ideology. The depressed director felt he'd never work in film again and went home to visit his dying mother. But then, Motil explains, he had an extraordinary stroke of luck.
Brezhnev liked to be entertained. He liked action and adventure films. And, of course, he watched a lot of stuff from the West. Every week, they used to bring him a couple of movies from a special basement storeroom in the Ministry of Cinematography. Well, one weekend, he was having a big party at his country house and had ordered an American Cops and Robbers movie. But the guys in the storeroom just couldn't find it. They were very afraid to tell their bosses that it had gone missing. And finally, the cleaner or the night watchman or somebody said, why not send this one instead? So my film was taken to the party, and the guests had had quite a few drinks by the time it arrived. They seemed to like it, because the very next morning, Brezhnev rang the minister and said, you make good films, thank you.
Once White Sun had the thumbs up from the General Secretary, it had to be released, but officials gave it no publicity. Nevertheless, it struck a chord with cinema goers, even though Motil was not well known, and nor were the actors. The leading man, for example, got involved in a fight a few days before shooting, and since he had black eyes and cuts all over his face, Motil had to pick a replacement for Sukhov at the very last minute. This improvised, accidental flavour is all part of the film's charm, says Art Troitsky, Russia's best-known cultural journalist.
The most amazing thing about acting in The White Sun of the Desert is that there are no big stars. This is maybe one of the reasons why the film became so popular, because it's very trustworthy. I mean, people see the movie and they believe that this was really so.
Ваше благородие, госпожа, удача. Для кого ты добрая, а кому?
The film's main theme song, Your Excellency, Lady Luck, written by the Georgian singer and poet Bulat Akujava, also became a massive hit.
Не везет мне в смерти, повезет в любви.
It's sung by the guitar-strumming customs officer Vereshchagin, who drunkenly declares that if he's out of luck in dying, he'll have luck in love. Fashion designer Dasha Razumikhina is the person who first introduced me to the film when I lived in Moscow in the early 90s and was getting to grips with colloquial Russian.
Many sentences from this film became like proverbs. Everyone knows them. I use myself a few things, like there is a moment when they're attacking this station or whatever it is.
Oh, when the women are hiding inside this big oil drum.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy said, we will kill you all inside. And he replies, navriatli. And this navriatli, which is kind of very Russian, if you want, expression, is like something like to say improbably, and I don't believe in that. And it's something I use a lot. And every time I pronounce this, I think about this moment from the film.
I suppose I would translate Sukhov's retort as, yeah, right, or in your dreams. But you get the general idea. Another off-quoted line of Vereshchagin's, which always gets a smile, is, I don't take bribes. It's an insult to the motherland. White Sun might have been shot 40 years ago, but in Putin's Moscow, there's an eponymous restaurant in its honour. It's decorated like a set from the film with a Central Asian chaikana or tea house, life-size soldiers, and bearded old men smoking hookahs. The film is even famous in outer space. It's become a lucky talisman ritually watched by cosmonauts before space launches. Why, I ask Georgi Grechko, who made three Soyuz flights and trained with Yuri Gagarin, the world's first man in space.
There are lots of comedies you could watch to lighten your mood, but that won't really help you. You are not going to spend 3 months in space making jokes. You have serious and responsible work to do out there. And when you face mortal danger, you need your head, your courage, and your sense of humor. So this film never failed to inspire me. It made me feel like a true Russian hero.
I was pleasantly surprised that it was an enjoyable movie, even though it was created during the Soviet times. And as a child in Hungary, I had pretty bad experiences with the Soviet films.
Charles Simonyi, the billionaire software engineer and space tourist, also watched the film. Speaking from his yacht in the Mediterranean, he tells me it was one of many traditions before each launch, such as a haircut, various exercises, and a small glass of champagne.
I would have been probably labeled as a strange character if I hadn't watched it, but I think that tradition as such is a very important component of the space program. And I'll give you another example. Just before we walked up the stairs that led us to the elevator, you know, in the very, very last minute, we have been kicked in the behind by the chief designer of the rocket. Again, this is a tradition that goes back 40 years. You know, it's probably a kind of an encouragement. It was a very dangerous enterprise in those years, I'm sure.
Journalist Art Troitsky says it's no wonder White Sun became an iconic film for Russians with dangerous jobs. Soldiers and cosmonauts relish the way the hero serenely lights his cigarette with a bunch of smouldering dynamite. It is, he says, an intensely male film. So I wonder if there's a link between the men in this film and the heroes of more recent Russian gangster flicks, the guys who wear tracksuits or Armani jackets and saunter out of courtyards tossing grenades over their shoulder.
No, Comrade Sukhov is a cross between an ultra-cool macho guy who shoots well, who drops bombs in the right places and so on, and a very touching and very protective kind of mother hen to all these women in the harem. Whereas in the modern Russian films, macho heroes are simply violent. They're like killing machines. I mean, they have no kindness in them.
White Sun was made under Brezhnev, but was created in the spirit of Khrushchev's thaw. That fleeting mood of hope and idealism explains the warmth at the heart of the film, and perhaps it explains why Russians of all generations still watch it. 3 years after White Sun was released, another iconic Eastern, The Seventh Bullet, was made by the Tajik Russian director Ali Khamraev.
It had the structure of a typical Western, but it also embodied a theme very close to my heart. Some thought it was about glorifying communism, you know, the brave red commander who wins back his men, but for me it was about something else. Imagine you come home to find all your loved ones have been kidnapped and taken to the mountains. What will you do? Go after them, and not just because they are your family. My heroes defend human values and would rather die than live in shame. That is at the core of all my films. The rest is just technical stuff.
A little later, Khamraev shot another Red Western, The Bodyguard. Like White Sun and The Seventh Bullet, the setting is Central Asia during the Russian Civil War, and the Basmachis are the bad guys. When a Red Army contingent catches a rebel commander, the hero must escort the prisoner across treacherous mountain passes, with the outlaws in pursuit. This film echoes many bounty hunter westerns, and that's no coincidence. Novelist James Meek says many Soviet directors were watching the American westerns and were trying consciously to imitate them. Nikita Mikhalkov's At Home Among Strangers, made in 1974, may be set in the post-revolutionary 1920s, but it's often compared to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. As in the Paul Newman-Robert Redford film, male camaraderie plays a big role.
You have this very tender flashbacks towards these slightly long-haired, vaguely hippie-ish-looking white guardsmen frolicking in the steppe in happier times. And the toughness of their later life is very much influenced by the way that Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was made. That mixture of tenderness and harshness, as well as this small group of men quite close to each other moving through this wild landscape. And trying to wrestle not only with people that they meet and the difficulties of the environment, but also with their own consciences.
And it also involves a train, doesn't it, which is a very iconic thing in a Western movie.
And that was a sign of man, which of course is very much part of the Soviet idea, as it was of the American idea, the idea of man's progress, taming the wilderness. But at the same time, that little ribbon of steel would look terribly vulnerable in this huge landscape, and often was, of course, to bandits, to robbers. And the film we're talking about was very much about the robbery of a train and a consignment of gold which had gone missing.
About a dozen Easterns were made from the 60s to the 80s by Russian and Central Asian directors. Although they were replaced later by Cold War spy thrillers and comedies, the genre might be due now for a revival. After all, there's been a recent spate of 21st century Westerns from the US, like the Brad Pitt film, The Assassination of Jesse James. And many believe that in the post-9/11, post-Iraq era, the return of the cowboy movie reflects American unease about the world. Could the same hold true for Russia? I ask the filmmaker and distributor, Vitaly Yerenkov.
Some of the films set in Afghanistan or Chechnya could be Westerns or Easterns. Tens of thousands of people died, and I'm talking about Russian soldiers, and many more locals died in Afghanistan, in Chechnya. And to be honest with you, most people would not be sure why, what they died for. There are questions which need some answers, and sometimes culture is the best way to try to approach these questions through fiction, through invented characters. In Alexei Balabanov's War, for example, the hero is the Russian soldier who returns to Chechnya to save the hostages. The rest, the Chechens, the Russian bureaucracy, the Westerner whose wife has taken a hostage, they're all shown in the negative light. The only positive character is the lead character, who is just a simple Russian guy from the provinces, not corrupted by the outside world somehow. It's not exactly a Western, but it has a lone ranger feel to it. He is set against everyone in the film.
Whatever the future of the Eastern Western, White Son of the Desert sets a gold standard and is still one of the country's five top-selling DVDs. The laconic Fyodor Sukhov will remain a role model for the next generation of Russia's Lone Rangers for many years to come.